Today on Rocket Pop, we are wrapping up the original Star Wars trilogy with Return of the Jedi. Film packed with rescues, revelations, and really weird creatures. As kids, we were there for the speeder bikes, the lightsaber battles, and Jabba the Hutt. But as adults, it's the deeper themes, especially the redemption of Anakin Skywalker, that hit the hardest. We'll dive into the craft, the messaging, and the family fit of this, I'll say flawed, but I'd say also meaningful finale. We say it's a fun family film for fans with kids maybe 7 and up, but you're going to have to talk them through a lot of it. If I've intrigued you about today's episode, be warned.
It's a trap!
Just kidding. Let's go.
Rocket Pop is go.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in
orbit. Roger, 0G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
Return of the Jedi. This is, so let's just set the chronology here. You've got the original trilogy, you've got Star Wars, or they call it New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and then Return of the Jedi. And then Lucas went and made these three prequels, which are, and then an assortment of filmmakers made these follow-ups that are, I'd say, a mixed bag. But this original trilogy, this is the one, I think, this is the one that counts. It's so interesting because you take, even though the way Lucas created this stuff, it was, he knew there were longer stories before and after. But if you take these three films, you've got a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it works. It's a self-contained little system here. In this movie, Return of the Jedi, Luke and his friends, Han and Leia and the robots, they're setting out to rescue Han Solo from Jabba the Hutt at the beginning. Then they rejoin the Rebel Alliance for this final assault on the Empire to knock them out. And as the Rebels are on this one planet trying to turn off a shield, the space crew is going to blow up this new Death Star. Meanwhile, Luke's having his final confrontation with Darth Vader and the Emperor. And it all comes this really nice little climax that, again, makes you feel like, oh, I saw a beginning in the first movie, a middle in the second. And at the end, in the third movie, I feel it completed. He'd originally set out, he wanted, when he made Star Wars and it was a hit, he was like, well, let's make 9 of these. And he started going, I don't want to make 9 of these.
Yeah.
So he made 3 of these. And again, it's a nice feeling to feel like, oh, when that, you know, I don't know about you, but I feel like, you know, obviously people talk about sequelitis. There's always more sequels, more stories, more stories, more stories. There's such a finality to the end of this one that it just feels kind of foolish that they would keep making more after this.
Yeah, well, maybe from a story perspective, but of course, the merchandising, it never ends.
No.
And Jeff, I wonder what your coaching would be. I agree with you that those three films, they are a capsule in themselves, and they're self-contained, very satisfying. I only learned 20 years later, you know, as you say in the intro, when we were kids, we came to see cute little teddy bear creatures and people on those, the racing through forests. What a dream for a kid. Like, do you think that would be incredible to be able to do that? That's what we were watching as kids. And only much later do you realize there's an arc that Luke has an arc, a 3-film arc. And Darth Vader has a 3-film arc, and they're very satisfying at the end. My question to you, Jeff, is would you recommend to families, if somebody comes across, I don't know, on your streaming service, just starting with Return of the Jedi and just watching that movie, would you ward against that?
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense. And a matter of fact, I think you would probably, the flaws of that movie, this is a movie from 1983, the flaws from that movie would probably stand out so much that you would go, this is what everybody's talking about? This is a Star Wars movie? But if you watch Star Wars, the first Star Wars movie, and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, you get in the flow of things and then you feel the satisfaction that you're meant to feel. But yeah, as a one-off, no, I think you would feel the special effects are not very, so I'll hit some things. We'll talk about craft for a moment.
Yeah, let's hear about craft.
I'll talk about the flaws. Number one, the special effects are not very good. And even with the special editions, Lucas went through and polished up some things. They haven't gotten much better. And a matter of fact, some of the things he added in to make it better actually made it worse. There's
Agree.
A weird scene. Jabba the Hutt is this fat gangster guy, and the reason they put that in is because everybody loves in each of the movies that there's some sort of scene where there's a bunch of creatures and it's like, oh, look at all these crazy creatures. Well, there's these creatures who sing a song, and in the original it's understated and it's not a big part of the plot or anything. It's just to set the mood. Well, he amped that up to where it's these CGI things. It's really dreadful. The acting is really bad in this one. Even Harrison Ford, who I think usually does a really good job, he's so phoning it in. Some of the lines are really bad. And honestly, I'm really running this movie down. This has a soft spot in my heart, but the plot, especially the first third, when they're trying to rescue Han from Jabba the Hutt. Han has been taken at the end of Empire Strikes Back and he's frozen and he's in this bad place. What the good guy's plan was makes absolutely no sense. There's no way to figure it out. And so you just have to check your brain and go, I don't know, they're trying to rescue their friend. Let's see what happens. So there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't quite work. Not to get too technical, George Lucas directed the first movie. He hired his old film professor for the second movie and does a really good job. The third movie, it's almost a mystery how he picked this guy, Richard Marquand. He wasn't a known quantity, but Lucas didn't want to direct the movies. He wanted someone else to actually be on the set doing things so that he could be behind the scenes overseeing things. Marquand's direction is not good. And a lot of the scenes either feel ham-fisted or they just don't add up in a lot of ways. And so in those ways, the craft isn't very strong.
Let me ask you a dum-dums question, which is when you say you're kind of more learned, you've got a film degree, this is kind of your world. When you say that you see poor direction when you're watching this movie, what do you mean? How do you call out direction when you're watching a movie?
Some of it's shot selection, and for the most part, that may not matter a lot. You have to get really in the weeds to go, that's not a good shot, that is a good shot. Some of it has to do with how the pace moves along, and I think overall, the pace moves fine. For me, where the direction comes up short, and I don't know that Lucas would have done a better job, is that there are definitely moments in this movie that are meant to feel dramatic or funny, and they fall short because the actors aren't quite there. And a good director would have stepped in and go, okay, thank you, Harrison. That was a good take. He's lying. That was a good take. You know, let's try it again and let's do it this way. Maybe try it this way and challenge them until, now we're in the moment.
I see.
With Empire Strikes Back, there's a bit of energy there. It sort of feels like they're improvising, even though they're not. They're reading the lines, but it feels a little more like they've gotten into it. With this one, it's like, okay, the paychecks, when do they show up? Okay, they show up. Okay, yeah. Great, that'll be fine. I'll say these lines. We're going to monkey around with some little kids dressed up as teddy bears and we'll be fine. It's like everyone's kind of rushing to the finish line. Here's maybe the a quintessential example of that.
Yeah.
The last shot of this entire trilogy, I was rewatching a bit last night. The last shot of this entire trilogy is a celebration moment. The Emperor's dead. The Empire's gone. Yay. And so they have the main cast, the good guys, all clapping along because there's some music going along. And if you look in the corner, Lando Calrissian, played by Billy Dee Williams, he's doing this. And a good director would have gone, hang on. I need, this is the last shot of the show. Like, I need you to be like into it. He acts like he's not on camera. And so I think there's a lot of actor directing stuff that comes up.
I see. And a good director would catch all of those details and put it together in a way that's compelling for the viewer.
Exactly. The writing also, again, I mentioned the plot, but we've got to, I remember even as a kid, I was 10 years old when this movie came out. I was, you know, so excited for this movie and loved it. I mean, as a 10-year-old kid, I wasn't going, no, a few notes, George.
Sure.
But even as a kid, I went, Wait, he's going to blow up. They're going to blow up another Death Star? Like, we
did that. I
remember
feeling that.
I guess there's a way to write it to where it feels weirdly satisfying. Maybe if the thing was five times bigger or I don't know what. But in fact, the stakes feel smaller. If you go back to a New Hope, the original Star Wars, this thing blows up planets. In this one, the climax of the entire thing, you know what it does? It blew up a ship. And granted, it's about to blow up all of the ships, but the stakes there feel lower. So those are the things that I think are my pick at.
Okay. Can you tell us a couple of things that in 1983, the Return of the Jedi did that we might miss, but we should appreciate? Like, this was mind-blowing at the time.
There's one moment in particular, so I'll mention, we'll say three things. One, the sets are just bigger. Like, when they're out on Jabba's skiff in the sand, everything feels huge. You go, this was an expensive movie. The second is, I always remember this from a behind the scenes thing when I was a kid. So every time you've got a space battle, back when you're making movies in the early 80s and late 70s, you would have individual elements. So we've got to shoot this ship, they'd have a miniature of it, and the camera would come up and so it feels like we're zooming in on that ship. Now we got to do that. Now it's a separate shot. We got to do this. And so they would composite all of these. So in the first two movies, you've got maybe like four or five ships at a time. There's a shot, and it's kind of a famous still, where it must have like 30 ships coming around. And they would use that as like a brag and go, man, we had 30 things, 30 composites. And the rumor is that one of the special effects guys at ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, the company that Lucas set up to create the special effects that does all the special effects now, they put their tennis shoe in. Like, nobody's going to notice this. We're going to shoot our tennis shoe flying through. So it's just a bunch of shots. And then the other one is the speeder bikes. You just get the sense that Lucas and whomever, they were sitting around going, I don't know, what would be cool for a 10-year-old kid to see? How about motorcycles racing as fast as they can, flying through the air through the redwood forest? Done.
And so fun.
It's still got the, you know, the little green screen glow around, but the way that's edited and moves along, and you still feel a bit of that white knuckle, and it still works, right?
Yes, it's so fun. I'll give another little Easter egg that you're reminding me of when you say the tennis shoe. I heard this is during Empire Strikes Back. Is it Empire Strikes Back where they're going through an asteroid field because nobody would think of going in here? That in one of those shots, when it's just all of these meteorites hanging around in space, that the special effects guys were like, let's just put a potato out there. And so they spray painted a potato to match all the other stuff. And it's somewhere in one of these tiny little details somewhere. I think that's fun.
That's great. The good part of the craft here is I like any story that is a little more segmented. Not that it's episodic, but you've got the Jabba the Hutt section. And then you've got the regroup. And then you've got this section over here, the last. And I also like in this last section, you've got three storylines going at the same time. So if ever you're like, okay, I got it, they pop to the next one. So in the last third quarter of the movie, you've got three things. You've got Luke and Darth Vader and the Emperor. We'll talk about that here in a moment. And then you've got down on the planet Hoth, you've got Han and Leia and the robots and Chewbacca trying to turn off the shield generator. And then you've also got the space action with Lando Calrissian, this guy Nyan Nunn, and Admiral Ackbar and all these trying to blow up the Death Star. I think that's really smart writing here, where it just feels like, oh, we're here. Oh, now, but we're getting really excited. I want to see what happens next. Nope, I'm going to take you to this next thing. And then it just keeps going until it all comes to a very satisfying climax.
Jeff, let me ask you another question. I know we're about to go into messaging. I'm sorry to add water to the soup here, but I think this is interesting. When you talk about these three stories happening simultaneously, we are used to, whether it's Simpsons or any kind of sitcom these days, we're used to seeing an A story, a B story, and sometimes a C story, and all these things being intertwined together. But you watch an old movie, we've reviewed Casablanca before, That's not happening. You're watching one story from beginning to end. Do you know the history of when did we start weaving in multiple stories, and why is that feel? This is so common for me in a movie or in a serial TV show on Apple TV or something. There will be one of the stories I'm not interested in. I don't like this character. I don't care what she's doing. Oh, this is a romance. Next, let's get back to the tension between the guy and his bad business partner. We are used to seeing that. Where did that come from?
I don't have a good answer for that. I would say, you know, even in Casablanca, they're more layered in one thing. So there is a romance.
Yes.
There is his relationship with Renault. So you've got all those. Whereas at the end here, they feel they're happening in parallel, I guess we can say. They're happening in parallel, and yet they're all, to some degree, contingent on one another.
Yes.
And then they tie up really fast. I couldn't say what the history of that is. I'm trying to think, were there other movies? They do a little of that in Empire Strikes Back. There's some of that. Not in Star Wars. We kind of follow the group all together.
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer.
Well, one
for
of
that.
The things that's so satisfying about it is because they're all happening presumably simultaneously. They're happening different locations around the galaxy, but they're happening at the same time, and they all depend on each other. This has to be happening over there in order for this to be happening over here. And yeah, it's very satisfying to watch. Okay, talk to us about messaging.
Messaging, I'll tie into the last thing I want to say about craft. And I think where the writing shines, this was written by Lawrence Kasdan, who was one of the co-writers on Empire Strikes Back. I would say one of the best writers in Hollywood history to some degree. Wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, a number of big movies. It was co-written between Lawrence Kasdan and obviously George Lucas. I think where the writing is the best is, and this gets into messaging, is the relationship between Luke Skywalker and his father. I think as a kid, the scenes between Luke and Darth weren't as exciting to me because, okay, they're fighting each other, and we know after Empire Strikes Back, Darth is Luke's dad. But this is really some heady stuff. I mean, you could almost say mythological stuff, which if George Lucas was listening to this, he'd go, that's what I was after, is can the son redeem the father? That's what he's wanting to do. And the big part of the messaging here is, just like with the other two movies, there's a big thread of friendship. As a matter of fact, there's a strong thread of friendship. Luke cares about his friends. At the climax of the movie, the Emperor doesn't say, I'm going to kill all those rebels. He says, I'm going to kill all those rebels and your friends. He keeps saying, it's really weird to see the Emperor saying the word friend. He goes, friend. Like he can't stand the word. And it's almost embarrassing how on the nose it is when he's saying friends. But that's what Lucas was after, that this decrepit old man who's destroyed mocks friendship. If you watch the Harry Potter movies, one of the biggest things is Harry Potter looks at evil Lord Voldemort, who's basically the Emperor, and says, I pity you, you have no friends. Friendship is a big theme in those stories as well. And I love that there's this theme of friendship. But getting back to the main message here is Luke just believes there's something good in his father. Darth goes, I'm too far gone. I'm on the dark side, and I'm going to take you with me. And Luke goes, if it costs me my life, it will cost me my life. I'm going to redeem you. And he just stays at it. And he goes back and forth. But ultimately, it works. And I, you know, as a kid, I know if you haven't seen this, I'm spoiling this, but Darth is dying. And he says to Luke, he says, take off my mask. I want to look on you with my own eyes at the very, very end. And as a kid, I was just fascinated to see, what does it look like underneath there?
Who is that inside there?
Yeah. And he looks like a sweet old man. And it's such an interesting, angle on it. He's this sweet old man. And the last things he says is, he says, tell your sister you were right. You were right. That what he's saying is, there was still good in me. There was still some sort of, you had hope for me, and it worked out. And Darth ended up giving his life to save his son. It's a weird thing. Luke saved his father, and his father saved his son, and everyone's happy to some degree at the end. But it's
this is such a profound idea that is easily missed, and so we would coach anybody that's watching this with your family to kind of give everybody a tip around you. Now, watch out for the relationship between Luke and Darth Vader, because it's the most important relationship in the Star Wars universe. So watch what's happening between them. And I dare say the older that we get, the more this message resonates, which is, forgive me for being a little acting like this is like out of scripture or something, but the story is that Luke is going to see the good in his father. That I think that insinuates forgiveness of some kind. I forgive him for what he did, the evil that he's done. All of our fathers have done evil, which we have to forgive them for. And my life and the life that I have ahead of me will be about the redemption of his story and honoring the good that there was in him. That is a profound truth. That isn't touched on, not always touched on in like an adventure action movie. So to underline it to whoever you're watching this movie with would be a great blessing, I think.
Mm. And maybe if you're a really bad dad, you might point at this and go, hey.
At least I'm not Darth Vader. I didn't try to kill you.
And you can believe in me. I'll be fine. Like at the end. I just love that. And together they face, I mean, it's weird. The Emperor is like, seems to be beyond redemption somehow. And he's just the worst of the worst. But the fact that Luke and Darth together take this guy down. And again, going back to the writing, if Luke didn't believe in his father, I don't know that all of the other things would have played out, that they would have destroyed the Death Star or whatever. But anyway, so there's a good message of redemption there.
Well, if I can throw out a metaphor that I hope, again, I hope it isn't a stretch, but what we saw was that Darth Vader, whose like name was Anakin, that he was influenced by this all evil power, which we could think of the Emperor as the devil. He's he's the king of the evil world. And what Luke was called to was to trust in an unseen sovereign power of some kind, which we talked about when we reviewed Return of the Jedi, that there's a parallel. Sorry, when we talked about The Empire Strikes Back, that there's a parallel between the Force and the Holy Spirit. And what he's called to turn away from the concrete power, which is the power of this world, of this age, that's the Emperor. And he's supposed to lean on something that he can't see, and he just has to trust is there. Hmm. Well, that's a pretty good analog for salvation for a Christian. His father was influenced by this power. I think it's very fun to track. It's not that obvious, but it's fun to track and look for parallels between the Luke story of being called. He has this confrontation in the second movie where he's presumably dead. I remember watching The Empire Strikes Back. He falls to in a bottomless pit. And we go, well, I guess he's dead. He wasn't dead. He comes back. He's more powerful than ever. That reminds me of somebody else's story. There are Jesus parallels in the Luke as Jedi story. And it's kind of fun to look for those. And there's a scene at the end of Jedi where, just like Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, there are historical characters that appear to him like a vision and affirm, you've done well. It's fascinating, right?
It's a cloud of witnesses right there at the end that is like, you did good. You did good. It's interesting. When they originally wrote this movie, it was called Revenge of the Jedi, and a lot of folklore around this. But you can, if you can track down an original poster, teaser poster that says Revenge of the Jedi on it, it's worth a lot of money. But then I think Lucas or someone, you know, this is before the internet, someone went, wait, I think in one of the movies we said that, a Jedi doesn't seek revenge. We can't call it that. Well, you watch the movie now and go, it would have been a terrible title, as if he's going to come and slaughter Darth Vader.
Right.
It's the return of the Jedi. Finally, Luke has become a Jedi. And there's no way to get around it. In this story, the three movie arc, Darth gets saved by the end. His life is, his soul is saved. His life isn't saved. His soul is saved because of this being who becomes who he's supposed to be to come and save him. And I don't know, it's a beautiful little thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in this movie, a whole lot going on. And it's funny, again, as older men, we're focused on the end. As a kid, it was always, let's go rescue Han Solo. And there's all these crazy creatures and Jabba the Hutt. What a weird thing he is. And he's not affected by the Force. And he's got all these crazy pig guards around him. And there's a hole in the ground that's going to eat somebody up. And they're trying to punish. You know, there's still so much fun going on. Everybody knocks on the Ewoks. As a kid, I thought they were fine. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, the hilarious little teddy bear guys who, and this goes back to a theme that Lucas sets up in the first movie. It was technology is bad. And so these primitive beings are taking down the most technologically advanced team in the universe with sticks. And I love when the big AT-AT thing's coming and they take two logs, clonk, and they just destroy its head. It's great.
Yeah, it's the best.
Very fun.
Yeah, it was such a stroke of genius to go, we want the force that takes out the evil high-tech galactic empire to be cute, lovable. I mean, there's a scene with Leia and when she meets the first one and he's kind of like a curious squirrel, you know, there's just kind of playing around with you and you're like, well, this is fun. And the kid is looking at that going, I want one. I want to meet one. I like this guy. It's like a dog that walks on his hind legs or something. And to have that crew kind of befriend them, like, we'll show you around this this Earth-like planet that they were on. It's a stroke of genius. And if there was any, I will say this, forgive me for shading into family fit. When we're around Jabba's lair in the first third of the movie, it's a little salacious, right? Even as gross as those creatures are, we're supposed to see that there is something sensual about Jabba's world. He's not a good guy. He wants to eat people. Sometimes he wants women in who are enslaved somehow to be
dancing,
performing for him.
Yeah.
It's weird. And there's something there that can be uncomfortable for a 10-year-old to watch. Mm-hmm. Not the Ewoks. A 10-year-old is right in a comfortable, very happy spot. Good guys, bad guys. And the good guys are fuzzy. And the bad guys are sheen, have this metallic, you know, exterior to them. So it's a great foil for the first third of the movie.
When you worded it perfectly, when they show the Ewoks, every kid goes, I want to meet one. That's exactly right. And you said salacious about Jabba the Hutt's crew. I don't know if you had this in the recesses of your mind, but his little Muppet buddy who sits next to him, his name is Salacious Crumb, which of course is not in the movie. It's just, you know, in the marketing of whatever, but
this is like the name Greedo, right?
Right. Yeah.
Salacious.
Salacious. And then there is a part in the middle where, you know, Luke has to go visit Yoda. I say has to because it does drag a little there, but it has to explain some things because it's going to set up that Luke and Leia are brother and sister, which I guess works. It's not the most exciting thing. When Mark Hamill tells Carrie Fisher that, Carrie Fisher has, it just sounds like she just finished off a full carton of Pall Malls. Oh, I had no, I sensed it inside. You almost see the smoke coming out of her mouth. So when it comes to family fit, as you've already got in there, you know, there are some moments at the beginning that are kind of scary. Luke gets dropped into almost like a dragon's lair where this rancor monster is that wants to eat him. And it eats one.
My 13-year-old was looking away.
The punchline of it is such a great punchline. It's like a truly funny moment where you'll get to it. The thing dies and the punchline of it is pretty darn good. So there are some crazy creatures at the beginning. As the movie goes on, it becomes a little more tame. But it is uncomfortable to watch Luke being tortured by the Emperor, and he's trying to kill him, but you have to appreciate that for what Darth does to bring it to life. Lot of fun here in the movie overall. But as we always say, it's worth talking about these things. It's worth talking about it, setting it up beforehand, talking about it afterwards. So for families with younger children, maybe 7, 8 years old and up, probably going to appeal more to boys. This is a fun movie. Watch it if you've watched the first two. Don't watch it on its own, but it feels like a good finish to the entire arc. You feel it. It's worth talking about beforehand. It's worth talking about afterwards. But more than anything, it's a fun night in the movies.
It's a trap!
Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.